My career at Los Alamos really did begin with my career at Harvard as a major in chemistry. Whether my decision to major in chemistry turns out to be a good decision really requires the rest of my life. I spent almost 3 years at Harvard taking all the courses required for a chemistry major. But when the war started, it became obvious that everybody in college was going to be conscripted, and anybody that was able to serve as a soldier, and that the chance of my surviving the war was going to be very, very small. Philosophically, I decided I wasn't going to survive anyway. At the end of 3 years, I decided I had to do something constructive for the war effort, and so I took a leave of absence and went to work in a munitions factory in Rockland, Massachusetts, which was manufacturing ground magnesium for flares and things of that type, tracer bullets and tracer shells. And at the end of about 3 months, I got my head in order, and I came back to school and went back to finish my studies. And I finished them in 3.5 years and graduated in January of 1943. My advisor was a professor of physical chemistry, E. Bright Wilson, Jr. He was very enamored of my abilities and tried to push me fairly deep into the more difficult courses, which I resisted for my main reasons being that my abilities didn't seem to lie completely in that direction. So I really didn't comply with many of his recommendations on courses, but took all the requirements anyway. At the end of that period, one of my advisor sessions with him, I indicated to him that I was going to try to join the Naval Air Corps. It was a very romantic idea at the time, and I was just a young kid, 22, 23 years old. And his response to me was, "Victor, do you want to be a dead hero or do you want to be a significant contributor to the war effort?" He said, "If I were you, I would choose the latter." And he offered me an opportunity to join him on the staff of a laboratory at Woods Hole, Massachusetts, which was being established by the group that he was working with at Harvard on the development of systems of understanding underwater explosions. But they couldn't begin to have information on large detonations because of the limitations of the campus. So they were able to lease space in the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute building, about 3 floors of a 4-floor building, and I agreed to come down and try it out. I did spend about 1.5 years there. I went immediately after graduation. This was in late January of 1943. When I arrived there, I was assigned initially to the explosives casting operation, which took place in a very primitive setup on an island about 3/4 of a mile directly across a Woods Hole Channel, Nonamesset Island. And there I was, along with a partner, able to prepare these explosive charges that were being used in experiments. And once I had gotten some experience with handling explosives, I was then brought back and put on a team. It was to go out into the harbor and detonate 10 to 20 pounds of explosives and follow the underwater shockwave effects of these explosives and detonation effects by attaching gauges of various kinds to an underwater submersion system. We operated from rafts in the area around Woods Hole. And ultimately, on one occasion, I had to operate at 40-foot depths to satisfy a physicist who was working with us at Cornell University on some of the theories of underwater detonations. But I continued to do that work for about a little more than a year, actually, and then my draft board in the town of Brookline, Massachusetts, which is where my home was, assigned me one a tag, which meant that I was going to be called. The laboratory officials, Wilson and others in the laboratory who had significant input into policies in the U.S. government, got to Leonard Carmichael, who was a former president of Tufts University and who was at that time head of the draft system in the United States. And with all of the attempts that they made, they were unable to prevent my being drafted into the Army.